Shalom, today the 23rd of Elul of the year 5776, corresponding to the 26th of September of the year 2016. And we return to our study of Tractate Makot, Chapter 2, the second Mishnah, which goes on to give us important distinctions between the case of a killer who was killing unintentionally and may or may not have to go into exile in one of the cities of refuge. And in the previous Mishnah, we had encountered the machloket, the difference of opinion between Rabbi Judah, the prince, Rebbe, and the other sages on the verse that I've put now on the screen in front of you in Deuteronomy chapter 19, verse 5, which is speaking about an example of what would be a case of unintentional killing. In a case where one comes with his fellow into the forest to chop wood, His hand slipped with the axe in cutting the wood. The metal went falling down from the wood, whether that was the wood of the tree or the wood of the handle. And the axe found the other person, found the companion. The axe found its way, the axe head found its way to the unfortunate companion of Omeis, and he died. He, the wielder of the axe, that this happened to him quite unintentionally, he will go to one of these cities and live there. Lest the redeemer of the blood shall chase after the killer. And when his heart is hot, he shall find him, he shall reach him when the way is long to the city of refuge, lest the Redeemer come, and strike him a mortal blow. But to this person from whose hand the axe head fell, he does not have the mishpat moves, the verdict of the death penalty. Because he did not hate him from yesterday or the day before. There was no history of hatred that could have explained that there was somehow an intentional deed. So these verses are the background to our being able to understand the Mishnah 2. Hazoyrek even l'reshus orabim. If somebody throws a stone out to the public domain, that is to say, somebody who is in his own private plot, his own private land, but he throws a stone out to the public domain, a street, a place where all are free to be, the horag, and he killed somebody through this stone. Hare ze goyle. This individual must go into exile, to the city of exile. Rabbi Eliezer ben Yaakov Oimer. Rabbi Eliezer, the son of Yaakov, says, Im mikeshe yotz soho even miyodoi. If from after the time when the stone went out from his hand, hoitzi haloz es reishoi v'kiblo, after the stone was already in motion, this unfortunate individual stuck his head in the way and received the stone smack on his face, on his head. Harize potur. In that case, the person that threw the stone would be exempt from the penalty of having to go to the city of exile. That would be considered to be a case of total onus, of duress, because the individual that took the blow stuck his head in the way after the stone was already in motion. In the first case, where the person threw the stone and somebody was around in the way of the stone. He threw it out of his own premises into the public domain. There is an element here of a pshi'ah, of negligence, because he should not have done that without checking that there's nobody in the way to get injured by this flying stone. And that is why in the first case, the individual would have to go into exile. Now we come to a further step in our Mishnah 2, Zorak es ho'even l'chatziroi v'horag. If the person threw the stone into his own yard and he killed somebody who was there, im yesh reshus lanizok likones l'sham, if there was authorization to the person that was injured, that was killed in this case, damaged, to enter there, if he entered in with permission, goyle, the person that threw the stone in their own yard and killed this person, will have to go into exile, because since there was somebody who had authorization to come into his yard, he should have taken care that nobody's around when he threw the stone. Ve'im lav, if not, if the person was an intruder who had no authorization to be there, enoi goyle, the person that threw the stone in his own yard, does not go into exile. Shenema, as it says in the verse in Deuteronomy 19 that we just read, va'asher yovoi es re'ehu vaya'ar, in the case where one comes with his companion into the forest. A forest is a neutral land. It is hefker, ownerless, and both people have as much right to be there as each other to chop down wood. And ma hayar reshus la nizok velamazik likones l'sham. Just like in the example in the Torah, the ya'ar, the forest, is a domain equally for the one that sustained the blow, the nizok, and for the mazik, the person that had the axe head drop out of his hand or out of the wood. They both have equal authority to be there. And In the example in the Torah, where it took place in the forest on neutral territory, the person that caused the death has to go into exile. Yotzo chatzar balabayis, there goes out, therefore, there is excluded from the above idea of neutral territory, there is excluded from that the concept of the yard of the house owner, his own private yard, she'ein reshus lanizok likones l'sham. There's no authorization for the nizok. Let's ignore the next word, which is not an authoritative reading of the Mishnah, because in the case of the private yard of the house owner, there's no authorization to the person that took the blow to be there. He did not ought to have been there, and it was therefore not the negligence of the house owner that caused the death. The other person had no right, likonis l'sham, to enter there. Abba Shol is now going to add a new teaching out of the same verse. Ma chatovas eitzim reshus, just like chopping down wood is reshus, it is something that there's no mitzvah in it. You are entitled to do it if you wish. If you don't want to, you don't have to. It is, you do it of your own free will. Yotzo ho'ov amake es benoi, that goes out from that concept of doing an act which you do voluntarily. There is excluded from that the case of a father that was striking his son in order to discipline and chastise the son. The father, in doing that, ought to be doing it for the sake of heaven, to train the child in the way of the Torah. And since the father in that case would be doing a mitzvah, if it were to happen, God forbid, that the child were to die under his hand, since he's doing a mitzvah in chastising the son, he would not be liable to go into exile, just as in the forest, if he was cutting wood, that's a voluntary act. There's no mitzvah in it. That's when, if an accident occurred, he would go into exile. But if he were performing the mitzvah of educating his son, then he would not go into exile if the son died under his hand, God forbid. The same applies to the Rav, the teacher, who is Roida. He is ruling over or using the rod to his student for the same purpose, to get the student to better use his mind and pay attention to the studies. Ushliach Beisdin, likewise, the emissary of the court. The emissary of the court is the one that goes to the place of somebody who's been called to a lawsuit and delivers the invitation of the Bet Din, the summons of the Bet Din to come to face the case. And the Shaliach Bet Din is entitled, when necessary, to use force. And if it happened that a person died under his blows because they were recalcitrant, that would be considered the case of a person performing a mitzvah and not being engaged in a voluntary activity. And therefore, if he caused the death of somebody, who would not go into exile. Now, Mishnah Gimel, third Mishnah, Ho'ov Goyle Aliyada Ben. The father may go into exile on account of the son. In other words, in a case where the father, God forbid, killed his son, not in a matter of discipline or teaching, but the death was caused through some other kind of negligence, the father would have to go into exile on account of the son. In this case, if the dead son had a brother, the brother could not become an avenger of the blood because the brother is not allowed to strike his father. In a case where the son caused the death of his father, the son would also go into exile into one of the cities of refuge. And now our Mishnah is going to go into the applicability of the cities of refuge to various categories of Israelites and also to the category of the Gir Toshav, the non-Israelite who has accepted upon himself the seven commandments of the children of Noah. And what is his status if he is residing in the land of Israel with respect to a case where he was involved in a manslaughter? Would he be going into exile in a city of exile or not? Hakol goylim al yidei Yisrael. Everybody would go into exile on account of an Israelite. That is to say that if anybody in the category of Israel, and that would include an Israelite Eved, a slave, a Canaanite slave, takes upon himself the same commandments that are taken upon themselves by women, and therefore he is a part of the covenant. He's also an Israelite, so if he were to cause the death unwittingly of a free Israelite or a slave or a kuti, that is a Samaritan in the times of the Mishnah, who was considered to be observing the commandments of the written Torah but not the oral law, they would all go into exile for the killing of an Israelite. For Yisrael goylin al yideihen, an Israelite would go into exile if he had caused the death of one of those, in other words, of another Israelite, of an Eved, a Canaanite servant, or a Kuti, a Samaritan. Chutz me'al yidei gir toshav. With the exception of, you'll see I've penciled in my Mishnah here, I wish to excise from my reading the Mishnah here the words al yidei, and to read this as chutz migir toshav, with the exception of a gir toshav. That is to say that the ger toshav does not go into an exile to a city of refuge if he had caused the death of an Israelite. According to the Rav of Ovadia of Bartanura, commenting on our verse, Chutz me'alidei ger toshav, she'im orag ben Yisrael b'shoigeg, if the ger toshav, the non-Israelite that observed the seven commandments, the children of Israel, if he killed an Israelite, even b'shoigeg, unwittingly, einoy goyle, he would not go to one of the cities of refuge, elo neherog. The law provides that in his case, if there were negligence on his part causing the death of the Israelite, he would be put to death. The ger toshav eino goyle elo alidei ger toshav. The ger toshav himself, the observer of the seven Noahide commandments residing in the land of Israel, would not go into exile except on account of having caused the death of a fellow ger toshav. In that case, he would be eligible for exile to one of the cities of refuge. Hasumo eno goyle divra Rabbi Yehuda, one that is blind does not go into exile if he had killed somebody, says Rabbi Judah. Rabbi Meir oimer goyle, Rabbi Meir says that he would go into exile. Hasoini eno goyle, one who hates his fellow and caused the death of the person he hated, he does not go into exile. And the Talmud says that one of the characteristics of somebody who hates somebody else is they have not spoken to them for 3 days on account of this enmity. Well, now, there are a number of qualifying opinions about what is the status of somebody who hated somebody and caused their death, where circumstances are ambiguous. Was it accidental or was it intentional? Rabbi Yose bar Yehuda Omer, Hasini Nerog. Rabbi Yose, the son of Rabbi Judah, says that a person who hated the other, if he killed that other person, he would be put to death. Mipnei Shehu Chamuod, because he is as one that has been warned, he is subject to a warning. If he already hates another fellow, he is subject to the stringency as one that has been warned, just as an ox that successively gores a number of people or a number of other animals is called a muad. We have witnesses testify that this is a dangerous ox and needs to have special care taken of him, that he should not get out and cause more damage. So likewise, somebody who is at enmity with another is in the same category. Rabbi Shimon Oimer, Yesh Seine Goyle, Vyesh Seine She'enu Goyle. Rabbi Shimon says, look, there is a case of one who hates another that would go into exile. And there is a case of one who hates another that would not go into exile. And he now gives us the rule, Zeh HaKlol, here is the rule, Kol Shehu yochol loimo lo das horag. In any case where you would be able to say, one would be able to say that the person killed intentionally, if there was any element from the circumstances that made it evident that there was an element of intentionality in causing the death of that person, he would not go into exile, because to go to exile, to a city of refuge, to escape the danger of the avenger, that is only where a person did the act unwittingly. If it was unintentionally that the person killed, and that is the case where he would go into exile. So now we come into the details of the cities of refuge, which are spoken about in a variety of places, in the book of Exodus briefly, in the book of numbers at the end in the allocation of the land, and in the book of Deuteronomy, the cities of exile, Mishnah 4 of Makot chapter 2, Lehichon Goylin, to where do they go into exile, these inadvertent killers? Le'ori Miklot, to the cities of refuge. Le'sholosh Shebe'eve Ayardin, to either the three that were on the other side of the Jordan, that is the eastern bank of the Jordan, the areas that were captured by Israel as described in Book of Numbers, Parashas Chukas, the territories of Moab and Ammon, and of the Bashan, the area of what is today the Golan, in that whole swathe of territory from north to south, on the east bank of the Jordan, there were three equidistant cities of refuge. There were another three in the actual land of Canaan itself, they being the city of Hebron and the city of Shechem, now called by the Arabs Nablus, and the city of Kadesh in the north, which will be associated with contemporary Tzfat, the three in the land of Canaan. Shenemar, as it says in God's instruction to Moses to allocate the land, Es Sholosh Orim Titnu Me'ever Yarden, three of the cities shall you give, you, the children of Israel, give them on the other side of the Jordan, the east bank, the three cities you shall give in the land of Canaan. And the Torah tells us in Deuteronomy that in time to come there will be another three added in the provinces to the east of these territories, making up a total of 10 lands promised to Abraham. So there will be, at the end of days, 9. Our Mishnah does not refer to these right now. Our Mishnah tells us, when did the cities of refuge come into force as offering refuge to the inadvertent killer? Ad sheloi nivcharu sholosh shebe'eretz Yisrael, up until the time that, as long as the three in the land of Israel had not been chosen, namely all the time that the land was being conquered by Joshua until it was allocated by the tribes. And we see at the end of Joshua the allocation of the cities of refuge in Israel. But all the time that this had not taken place, lohayu sholosh be'eva hayadin koltos, nor would the three on the east bank of the Jordan absorb inadvertent killers. These territories on the east bank of the Jordan were already in the hands of the tribes of Israel. They were given to the tribes of Reuven, Gad, and Manasseh by Moses, as recounted at the end of the book of Numbers. But even though the three cities had been named in those eastern territories, they did not come into operation until the cities in the motherland would come into operation. Shenema, Sheish Orei Miklot Tihieno. The Torah says in Numbers chapter 35, 6 cities of refuge shall there be. So the implication of these Hebrew words is that there will only be cities of refuge when they will be, when all 6 of them will come into operation. Ad sheyihyu shishton koltos ke'echod, until all 6 of them will be absorbing together. Mechuvanos lohen drachim mizolozoi. Mishnah 5. Mechuvanos lohen drachim. There were aligned to them roads from one to the other. The roads were very strictly aligned, as we shall see. Shenema tochin lecho aderech veshilashto. The Torah says in Deuteronomy chapter 19, prepare for yourself the road and veshilashto, divide up the way into 3. That is to say that everywhere in the land had to be somewhere near a city of refuge. So they made the 3 cities equidistant to one another, and they made the distance from the southern border to the southernmost of the 3 cities the same as the distance between the southernmost of the cities to the middle city, and likewise the distance from the middle city to the northern city was the same as the distance from the northern city to the northern edge of the country. So in that way, the cities were equidistant, anybody anywhere in the country, if a case of accidental killing had taken place, could quickly get on his way to escape the wrath of the Avenger of the Blood, to get to the city of refuge where the Avenger is not allowed to touch him. They give over to them, to these inadvertent killers, two Torah scholars in each case to accompany the inadvertent killer on his way to the city of refuge, Shemo Yahargenu Vaderech, lest he, namely the Avenger of the Blood, might kill the killer on the way in vengeance. Vaydabru Elof, the Torah says in that passage, they shall speak to him. Rabbi Meir Oimer, afhu madaber al yedei atzmoi, shenemar v'ze devar aroitzeach. It's not only that people have to speak on his behalf, but the two Torah scholars who, if the Avenger showed up on the scene, would have to speak to him. The verse is, V'yadabru elov, they shall speak to the Avenger to say, don't touch this man, he's not been tried yet. Rabbi Meir says, Hu medaber al yedei atzmoi, we can learn from a different verse that the killer himself may tell the Avenger, don't touch me because this was not intentional. Shenemar, Rabbi Meir learns this out of the Hebrew words in the text there, Vezeh devar aroitzer, this is the word of the killer. We would translate this phrase, this is the matter of the killer, the law involved, but according to Rabbi Meir, the use of the word davar here implies that the killer himself may speak in his own defense against the Avenger of the Blood, not to touch him. And with that, we come to the conclusion of today's Mishnah study.